Blog Talk Radio.
A team of voices, and this is a special show for Anzac Day, and we hope you enjoy it. And we've got a number of great poems. And joining me on Blog Talk Radio, a team of voices, is none other than Jay Hatter. Hello, Hatter. How are you?
I'm fine. Seven's the number.
Excellent. And I've also got Deborah Lee. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, thank you. And we have a whole heap of people to bring into the studio. We have Stephen. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, AP?
Yeah, good. Thank you. And we have Linda. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hi, AP. I'm good. Happy almost Anzac Day.
Absolutely. Well, it is Anzac Day for me. Almost Anzac Day for you. Anzac Day for me. So, and hello, Wayne. How are you? I am very, very well. So, it is Anzac Day here. I've already put a few pictures up on the board. The big services here are the dawn services this morning. So, if you're keen, you head your way down to the war memorial here in Melbourne, and you get to about a crowd of about 20,000 or 30,000 there at 5:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And if you go to Queensland, which is where the first two shots are taken, the sun, of course, rises here in the east, and so you get this wonderful scene on the beach. The dawn service happens on the beach in Queensland, in beaches. And so we have the first shot from the Gold Coast, from the Lillibar, where they had a crowd of about 25,000 people at 5:45 a.m. And then the second shot's from the Sunshine Coast, which is up north of Brisbane, and you can see for the size of the crowd there. Now, Stephen, I think you're probably on a rush. Is that right? So do you need to speak and run, so to speak? So we might grab your phone and put it on the board first, so that you can get into the get in and get away. So
alrighty.
Bear with me. I'll grab that.
I was also going to read K's for her too, if that's all right.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Well, look, what I'll do is I'll put yours up first and then get you to read yours, and then we'll get you to read K's, yeah? It is on the board now. Stephen, your pump.
All righty. And I just wanted to say that the title is actually something that we did a show on before, is a phrase that was coined in World War One, which meant that a soldier could easily be alive one day and gone the next. So I call this here today and gone tomorrow.
Yep.
Stalwart deeds of metal, bold deeds of fleet, buried neath the vaults of cold concrete, horrid times of war and daunting times of hurt, 2 yards deep neath moribund dirt. Whether found by bullet, shrapnel, or age, their calling pulled them to the stage, to be the shield for countrymen and kin, and to take on coercion for the win. So pin the rosemary upon the breast, march through the streets for those at rest, place crucifix before the headstone, lest we forget what heroes shone. End poem.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great saying, actually, Steve. Here today, gone tomorrow. We still use it here. I don't know if you use it in the States. We still use it here. And it was completely true of the Anzac landing in Gallipoli in Turkey, which is what started the whole Anzac legend. There were 16,000 soldiers who were put onto those beaches, and they're sitting straight up a hill, like a mountain, really. And of those 16,000 soldiers, within 24 hours, 2,000 were killed. And it just was unbelievably horrible, the conditions there. And they were so horrible. That's why you got phrases like here today and gone tomorrow. It was the same on the Western Front, where people, you know, had such incredibly awful and terrible conditions, and so many people died. So I appreciated the poem, Stephen. Yeah, did you want to say a few words?
Yeah, I liked the ending, especially. So pin the rosemary upon the breast, march through the streets for those at rest, place crucifix before the headstone, lest we forget what the heroes shown. There's just the whole poem is awesome, but there's just a ton of respect right there in that closing stanza, and I think that the photo that you chose commands respect, because look at all those graves, and the front page picked poem that you wrote is filled with respect as well. I think you did a great job with it, Stephen.
And Hannah, did you want to say a few words?
Yeah, it's very good. I always get choked up at the Memorial Day rights. Man's inhumanity to man can make heroes from cowards and can make cowards from heroes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thanks, Adam. Mm-hmm. Okie dokie. Now, Stephen, you have also got a poem on the board that I have put from Kay. Did you want to read that one for us too?
Yes, this is called Birthplace Beginnings Honors Its Fallen by Kay. Red poppies and vining pearls of trellising fuchsias, sepals of trumpeting in sepsis sepia, high color sun's turn, her gown dusting earth wardrobe's man of war agony, blossoming with each drop. 'Tis not a time to weep for what man spilled, angel mother of mercy, her cap blushingly teared, layers the seedlings sprouting on her gown. Though the grass is green, the sun is shining, feet betwixt moonless crestfallen stages foretold, souvenirs echo, honoring spoils, glance and pallid, looking sprightly. She begin the salt in watering the blooms, topiaries in blood red, ancestors this land. End poem.
Yeah, thank you, Kay, and thank you, Stephen, for reading. It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, all we have now to remember those times of the memories and of images and symbols like the red poppy, it's difficult to think about how difficult and hard those times were, but at least we have some symbols to hold on to. And I think Kay did a wonderful job there of putting those together and again, a very respectful way. Wayne, did you want to say?
Yes, I think she did a beautiful job honoring the soldiers that paid the price. And I like the line where she said, her gown dusting earth wardrobes, men of war, agony, crossing with each drop. She was a little warm here, and I enjoyed her a whole lot. Great job, hey, okay, like it.
Thanks, Wayne. Linda, did you want to say a few words as well?
What did you say?
Linda, did you want to say a few words for us?
Oh, yes.
About that poem?
Please, yeah. She has a line towards the beginning, 'tis not a time to weep for what men spilled. I thought that was really an awesome line because you're not weeping, you're sitting there and you're looking at them, and for them to go through this, it was with pride and with honor, and they would rather be remembered for that honor and that pride than to have you sit weeping. So I kind of really liked that word, I mean that line. And then souvenirs echoing, honoring the spoils, blanched in palates looking sprightly, she being the salt and watering the blooms. And on a side note, I love that picture that she found of the woman is literally like a poppy fairy. So I think that's an excellent addition to it. But another poem with a touch of class, a touch of love, a touch of pride and honor. So I think that she did an amazing job with this one.
Yeah. And thanks to you, Stephen, for both for reading both poems and for joining us for the show. It's much appreciated.
Thank you. You all have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you again, Stephen.
See you, Stephen.
Good night, Stephen.
So, it was interesting. As you all well know, I'm very attached to Banjo Patterson, and he actually set sail with the ships with the troops in them from Albany in 1914. And he was aboard, and he was a special commissioner, he said, with the Australian troops. And he actually sent via code, of course. What was going on with the troops, and it was kind of interesting. He said, "Sunday, November 1st, was a red-letter day in the history of Australia, for on that day a big fleet of transports put out from Albany for a long trip half across the world," he wrote. "The previous day, there was movement at the harbour, just as it had done when the colt from Old Regret had got away," Patterson wrote, "but word passed around in the mysterious way in which words do pass around. The next day dawns. The only sign of life is the column of smoke pouring from each funnel. And this alone, it is, it tells us that Australia's greatest maritime venture is about to put out to sea." And so he wrote about that as the troops were pulling out of the harbour. He wrote about that as they were going across the sea, and then, much to his frustration, he didn't get accepted into the forces in France, and so he ended up going and driving an ambulance around in World War One. Anyways, I should get some more poems. I just love the fact that you can actually hear sort of banjo and even in Denny's talking about ships going out. Wayne, I'm going to grab your poem next.
Okay.
From the board.
The two countries kill each other.
Sorry, Wayne, I missed that. That broke up a bit.
Okay. Yeah, I was just looking at the two countries that are going to kill each other. And so that's how my poem gets started. So hope you enjoy it.
Okay, cool. Thank you. So let me copy this and put it on the board. And then you've got a SoundCloud, but I'll play the SoundCloud. And we'll do you next, Hatter. I'll be there in one tick. This is Wayne's poem now.
This is called Brothers Forever. The April night was young, to the present view, me and my younger brother, May 2. The purple hue made a perfect night to leave. It didn't take long for little brother to believe. We sit on the hillside, gazing at the moon. Thought it was our time to leave soon. We were excited to see our future ahead, but I knew it wouldn't be hard to end up dead. And even though I was older, he was the best looking, and I was known for the Barbie with best at cooking. We made up our minds we were going to live free. Little brother had a lot of zeal and looked up to me. At last we were independent, decided to stay that way. We landed on troubled shores early one day. Sitting there was adventurous and small, but gave it all. My nickname was Down Under, responded to the call. To the best ever, happy ends our day, brothers. Ian?
Thank you, Wayne. I mean, it must have been a heck of a journey for these folks, because they've gone halfway across the world from farms usually and big outback areas, and then they land on this strip of land, and it's just over a kilometre long, and they only got about 500 yards in, and so there was actually no safe area that they could go, and so it as I said, it must have been a huge adjustment for those folk, and damn scary. So But thank you for your poem. Thank you. And I am going to go to Liquid Damage for a comment.
Did you say me? I'm sorry.
Linda? No, Deb, I said Linda, are you there?
Linda, okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Comment on Wayne's poem for me.
Sure. That was great, Wayne. It was emotional and loving and very caringly written. I thought you did a really good job. The imagery was really great, and it kind of shined. So thank you for sharing it. You're welcome.
Next one. And we're going to get a comment from Hatter as well.
Yeah, I couldn't hear it too. I couldn't hear it too well. Yeah, I have to read it again. I don't want to comment blind.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, all good. Deb, did you want to say a few words?
Yeah, I think that Wayne, you wrote this from your personal knowledge, and it shows in the lines. Like how you stepped into how they would have felt looking, even though I was older, he was the best looking. It made me smile there. I was known for the Barbie, was the best at cooking. We made up our mind. We were going to live free. Little brother had a lot of zeal and looked up to me. I know that I've told you a couple of times that I think that you're incredible for your own service. And I think that your approach to this was really awesome. And at the end, I like how you incorporated the fact that it was adventurous and a small part gave it all. Because sadly, in every war, people, men, women, probably just men at the time, but give it all. And I just. As usual, you made a great recording and a great poem, and you appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about the mix-up with you.
That's okay. No, Zealand is a lot of your country. It's a pretty country. It's one of the prettiest in the world. And the Barbie is known for Australia, so that's why I got put those two there. One's known for cooking because the Barbie, and that was the best in the country in the world, probably. We've got to put that in there. Maybe I'd like to say thank you for having that.
Thanks, Wayne. I'm just having a look because in addition to Australians being killed, there were 2,779 New Zealanders killed as well, and that was about a sixth of those who landed on the Gallipoli, very small Gallipoli Peninsula. And the losses of the New Zealanders were more than probably the Australians in some ways in terms of total numbers. And so and that was why the day became Anzac Day, because it was the loss of Australian troops, it was the loss of British troops, it was the loss of New Zealand service people. So a big call out to my Kiwi brothers, Arau and Arau. With that, we are going to move on to Hatter's poem. Hatter, you've got a poem on the board.
Yeah, been a little different this way this time. I hope you don't mind. And I was gritting my teeth when you spoke between the poems, and you'll figure out why. It's called Awesome Aussie
okay.
Stuff. It goes like this. Me, being an American, would like to thank the soldiers from down under. For the ones that never returned, I've learned the numbers. In World War I, with a population of fewer than 5,416,804 Australians enlisted, 62,000 never came home. In World War II, 10,700 Australians gave their lives fighting to liberate France and Belgium from Hitler's tyrannical regime. Australian soldiers met the Japanese in Papau. Is that how you say that, Papau?
Yes.
and yes. New Guinea in some of the most horrific conditions imaginable, with the train always favoring the Japanese. Better use of technology, medicines, clothing, and weapons, all jungleized to eventually turn the battlefield in the Australians' favor. And with the U.S. and British victory at Midway prevented the planned invasion of Australia by Japan. The Korean War, 336 Australian soldiers failed to return home. 3,700 wounded and 1,216 became POWs. Vietnam War, 523 Australian soldiers lost their lives and 2,400 were wounded. This is astonishing, the curse of war, the sights and sounds of the devil's whore. Listen to the boob tube, they'll twist your mind. Honesty, integrity, responsibility have been left behind. The numbers have names. They also have mothers, a father, of course, sisters and brothers. Don't call them a number unless you were there, fighting for their lives, the stories they share. Have you ever been shot at, machine gunned or bombed? Go find out what it's like, and I'll bet it's not long, so you can understand what soldiers do for you. Be careful what you say and know when you do not know, have a clue. Sorry. It's easy to hate, to complain and disrespect. Try harder to love and communicate, and better yet, let's not. War is man's inhumanity to man, and with only a few exceptions in nature, we human beings, supposedly intelligent, compassionate, reasonable, we go to war. We have developed weapons that can electrify you, blow you up, and vaporize you. If this thing called life is just a game to be played, where there is no one winner and everybody pays, the rule is easy to create peace on Earth, and the clock is ticking. I think it's in the fourth quarter, and you're planning on kicking. Face it, we are doomed, consumed with our own greed, and God was to come. He would burn the fields and start again planting seeds. I don't know how you think it's real, but this time I believe the danger has a feel. Is there not something we could try? And answer me this, where are the good guys? I see the liars, the thieves, the crooks are there too. I see them planning, contriving, lying to me and you. So I will hope and pray, and I will look to the sky, raising my fist, screaming, tell me, please, where are the good guys? A little different.
It is a little different, Hatter. A lot different. Look, it is absolutely true that Australians have gone and fought their way all around the world to support the US, to support Britain, to support countries, and then it got very close to us, obviously, when it all started to come down towards Singapore and Indonesia and the Pacific, and then, you know, Australia had submarines in Sydney, Japanese submarines in Sydney, and then we had bombing in Darwin, and then fortunately, thank goodness, a whole heap of work
said
was done.
If they would have been able to set up in Papua New Guinea, you guys would have been in trouble.
Yeah, I know. There was a heck of a lot of naval fighting and battles, and America was at the front of that. And Australians are very cognizant of that, and the amount of sacrifice that was made to do that.
They say in the islands there, the spotters from Australia were insurmountable to the win, to the victory. The spotters, Australian spotters.
And the perfectly horrible campaign in Papua New Guinea jungle truck stuff, just dreadful. But at the end of the day, you're right. You know, these soldiers all have names, and they all have mothers, and they all have families, and There's just been so many, you know, dreadful losses.
Well, I'll tell you, having less than 5 million people, having less than 5 million people in your whole country, 500,000 volunteer enlist. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
World War II.
It was just considered the thing to do. My grandfather and his two brothers all joined up, you know, the minute it all sort of started. Because that's what you did. And that's what everybody did, you know. But basically, anybody is good.
Their parents or grandparents, with the stories, were the oppression that Europe felt during the King Leopold and the first council of Germany. So when they got here, they knew what it was to defend your home. We don't. These generations, we're weak. And some of these people coming over here are war-torn. We are pretty much...
Yeah.
We have been ourselves. We're pretty much wasted. We don't understand war. We don't understand it.
And maybe that's a good thing, Hatter, to be honest, because these people all joined up after seeing what happened in World War One, and they still all joined up. You know.
Jordan Peterson has a philosophy of said, "Don't be passive in a male. No, be a monster, but learn how to control it." Because if you don't have the aggression when you need it, then you can't defend your family, your country.
No, I understand.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I understand.
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Thank you. It is different, and it probably should be. But no, thank you for writing it. And
I had a tough time.
Did you want to say? Yeah. Oh no, it's not easy. Believe me. Deb.
Yeah, Hatter, I'm glad you followed your muse because, you know how AP's always saying that you ask really good questions? Well, your mind was racked with questions, so you just went and found the answers. You were wondering how many people and what the statistics were, so you did the work and you went and found them, and I think that the information that you shared is powerful and sobering. And I think that it wouldn't, no matter what else you wrote, it wouldn't have been the same because your muse was trying to get these answers for you and then to share them with us and present them the way you did. I think that you did a fantastic job and never fight your muse.
Yeah. I called Deborah when I was struggling, trying to figure out what to write. One of the tightest bonds between countries, what I learned about the United States, for example, the longest ally we've ever had is Morocco. And Australia is very high on that list as far as an ally for the United States.
Absolutely.
I had to know. Being American, we're never told how many Australians gave their lives during the wars. They were there alongside us, everyone, every time.
Yeah, look, it was they were tough times, and my grandfather's brother, elder brother, had the distinction of going over to fight firstly against Rommel in the desert in Tobruk. And so he did that first, and then having succeeded somehow in winning that war, then they got shipped back to Japan and fought the Japanese in Papua New Guinea jungles. So that's
two worst environments. Yeah, two of the worst environments you could fight in, have to fight in.
Yeah, and that was him. And then, of course, he wasn't fighting because he was an ambulance. He was an ambulance officer and pharmacist. He wasn't a soldier. He wasn't carrying a gun. And that sort of made it even sort of more difficult still, if it could be. And then, because I sort of thought, you know, when you're an ambulance officer, what that would mean is that you'd have bloody great big symbols all over you, which would talk about the fact that, you know, that you're an ambulance person, you know. And so what really stunned me was what little identification they had as ambulance officers. Yeah, so people always talk about ambulance officers being shot at by the enemy, the Germans or Japanese. Yeah, but
I think the Germans had more respect for the symbol than the Japanese.
Well, that's probably right, but this is, you know, he was wearing a green military coat, right? And he was going and trying to get his
was he a conscientious objector?
And grab wounded people had up, yeah. And the thing was that you could hardly identify ambulance people. Let me show you. So he was wearing a green, or I think it was green coat in those days, and he had these tiny little epaulets. And I wish I could do it, but I can't do it at the minute because the All Poetry site won't let me add them. But all he had were a couple of little epaulets on his shoulders that showed that he was an ambulance person. That was all he had. And that was, you couldn't have seen it in a battle.
Yeah. Well, if you remember the film MASH, they didn't look much different than soldiers, the field medics.
No. But I was showing this to Pee Wee earlier. These are the medals of my great uncle, which I've put up on the board there. Were the ambulance symbols of his coat. Those red squares. They were what identified him as a medic or ambulance officer.
Maybe they knew, now, like you said, being marked at like almost like an officer, you were first targeted.
Well, maybe, but they're the actual ambulance markings of his coat. Anyway,
cool.
Wayne, did you want to say a few words about Hatter's poem?
Yes, I have. That's a wonderful tribute to the fighting men from Tama. And that war started, and the other wars that started then. But when you fight for freedom, you have to fight. You fight for the good guys and the bad guys. So it doesn't matter who you're good or bad. Back home, that you fight for your freedom too. So you have to fight for everybody's freedom, whether they're good or bad. And that's all it is about war. Is you fight for your home state to be free. And that's what we're fighting for. Great job, Tanner.
Yeah. Thank you, Wade. Yeah, it's a good reminder that freedom is not free. There's a cost.
That's it.
A big cost.
It isn't. And we have to remember that and reflect on that. So what I'm going to do next is grab Gerald Green's picture and poem, which is called Remember, and I'm going to put that up on the board, and then he has got a SoundCloud, and so I am going to play that SoundCloud now.
Remember, written in red by Gerald Green. Though halfway around the world, 5 million Australians sought to halt aggression's thrust in European fields of war. New Zealand's million felt the same and volunteered their best to help defeat the empire's enemy. INSEC's volunteers, 500,000 strong, enlisted, did not hesitate, wore their uniforms with pride. The men agreed to attack the Dardanelles, striking Ottoman's underbelly, slashing weakness from the south, freeing Black Sea ports for Russia. Military goals seemed sufficient in Britain's smoke-filled rooms, but proved inadequate when bullets flew. European overconfidence flowed like an expensive wine in safe and secret chambers where white-haired men studied faulty maps. Poor intelligence shaped plans that sacrificed and wasted precious volunteers. Training proved inadequate as generals mistook courage for skill, sacrificing blood instead of ammunition, relying on valor to fill the void. Tactical deficiencies became the norm as men dug trenches and lived 12 months in hell on the hills of Gallipoli. In spite of all the Allies did to overcome the Ottoman, logistic failures and poor tactics prevented gains and forced retreat. The war dragged on for 3 more years while Anzac's men met bullets and disease that showed commitment to the cause and brought the Great War to an end. 16,000 volunteers were lost in that campaign and still today are recognized for service and great sacrifice.
Thank you, Jared. And you're absolutely right, we do. And we stop on the day and recognize and remember them for what they did and what they all managed to do on our behalf. Seth, did you want to say a few words about Jared?
Check your studio. Yeah, I think that his research showed as well, and I like how he also emphasized how many stepped up. It was a monumental number, and the strength and bravery it took to do that. And I like how, what was that? The European overconfidence flowed like inexpensive wine in safe and secret chambers where white-haired men studied faulty maps. And the thought of that, you know, you're studying wrong information and poor intelligence shaped the plans that sacrificed and wasted precious volunteers. And that in itself is a very sobering thought to imagine,
yeah.
Make it a plan around false information and how many were lost because of it. So I think that this is another extremely respectful approach to topic. Great job as always, Gerald.
Yeah. And I'm going to bring in Sweet. Hi, Sweet. How are you?
This is okay. How are you?
Hello, Sweet. I am very
good. Hello.
Now, did you get to listen to Gerald's poem?
I did. I did listen to Gerald's poem, Bombering, as are many of these types of days where we go back and we listen to the bravery and the mistakes that are made and the cost of those mistakes. And yet the courage and the bravery, they march on for the cause and for what they believe. And they never put down their guns. And yet, you know, that lamb now washed in their blood.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thank you, Sue. I have seen that Liquid Damage's poem is up on the board. Liquid Damage, you've got a poem called The Fallen Remembered. Did you want to read that for us?
Okay, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Did you want to read your poem for us, Linda? It's up on the board.
Okay, yeah. Is it up there? Let me...
Yes.
Okay, how come it's not? Let me refresh.
Maybe refresh, yeah.
Uh-oh, how come it's not doing it? Okay, I'm having technical problems here.
No, that's okay. I'll come back, Linda. I'll come back. So I'll let you...
I'll just do this.
Get the technical...
Okay, I got it.
You got it? Okay.
And I'm gonna apologize to you in the beginning, AP, but this is called The Fallen Remembered. And I chose this picture. It wasn't one of the prompts, but I saw it, and
yeah.
I saw the faces of these gentlemen, and just really hit me hard that some of these men didn't make it out of that trench.
Yeah.
But anyway, it goes like this. G'day, mates. My name is Joe, but my mates call me Digger. I'm a lieutenant in the ANZAC, or Australian-New Zealand Army Corps. I woke this morning a bit flat out, but I took some time to roll me a durry. That's a cigarette to you, Yanks, and sit back in my rack for a smoko and think about the day ahead. I was a bit buggered from the goon we drank the night before, but as I sat back and watched the smoke rise and curl in the morning light, I started feeling better. It was April 25th, 1915, and we have a mission today to join the Gallipoli campaign. That was to wrest control of the Dardanelles and reestablish sea communications with Russia through the Black Sea and end the Ottoman Empire's role in war. I was just about done with my durry when Captain Nick came in and said, "It's time to go, mate, so move it." I threw on my gear and slouch hat and got ready to move out. So off to we went to the trenches of Gallipoli after an intense battle north of Gaba Tepe, now known as the Anzac Cove. And at a tremendous loss of life and limb, we made it there. Unfortunately, Joe never made it home. After 3 months in the trenches with death and disease about him, he was hit by enemy mortar on July 17, 1915. With his last breath, he crawled over to his mate, Curly, and protected him from enemy fire with his body. He died. It was a long and horrific battle for Joe and the thousands of other ANZAC and Allied forces that fought through the unspeakable and unbearable conditions that were the Gallipoli campaign. Today, April 25th, 2023, we stand here today to honor those servicemen and women who courageously fought that battle and many other battles and wars to come. If not for those brave individuals, life could be very different. I have personally heard from several Vietnam vets that they were proud to have fought alongside the ANZAC soldiers. So let's take a moment to honor these brave men and women.
Thank you, Linda.
End poem.
The Australian soldiers were known to be a little bit different, it's fair to say, even in World War One, and the English didn't like them very much because they were undisciplined. And what they meant by that was they didn't dress very well. They were a bit nonchalant. They didn't shave every day. And some of them would object to tasks if they thought they were stupid. They knew what to do. They looked after themselves, and they were basically got an incredible reputation in World War One, and despite the fact that they were a little bit loose with their clothing and a little bit sort of offhand with discipline and stuff, they were extremely good at what they did. And I'll give you an example of that. There was General Haig, who was the British general, the chief field marshal. In his diary, he said, "The Australians had said at the last moment that they would attack the windmill again without artillery support, and that they did not believe machine gun fire could do them much harm. We arranged that the original military program should be carried out. The Australians are splendid fellows, but very ignorant." End quote. Great poem.
right tone.
Well, you know what?
What did you think of my Australian accent?
I liked your Australian accent. I was going to talk about that. It's very cool. I liked it. I thought you did a great job with your accent. Many people would say that you sound more like me. You did very well. Patter, did you want to say a few words?
Yeah, what you were just describing with that general, there's a fine line between courage and cowardice.
Yeah.
I guess ignorance. It can look the same. I thought that for a general to say that about active troops is pretty pretty arrogant in itself. Are you stupid or just brave?
We have a thing with British patter. You've heard, you know that British and us.
Yeah.
You know we look, that it's a thing. Anyway, I had to quote the British general. Wayne, did you want to say a few words about Linda's?
I love it. This poem is overwhelming. I think you just had to bring it to life. It touched me deep within. The poem brought tears to my eyes. This is the greatest tribute I've ever heard. Thanks, man. It's fabulous.
Thanks, Wayne.
Yeah, really cool. And Deb, did you want to say a few words? Thinking about Australian accent.
I agree with Wayne. I think that, Linda, you turned around and those men in this photo touched you and you stepped into their shoes and you brought it. Between the voice accent information, the truth, the hard-hitting parts, I'm overwhelmed too. I think that you always bring it, but damn girl, you the research shows the respect. I'm impressed. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, and I also found out that in that battle alone, there were 46,000 deaths. And 11,000 of those were Australians, and 250,000 casualties in that battle alone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it?
You know,
just absolutely crazy.
On a side note, I feel like I have to say the way everyone approached this to pay tribute to this day, because of you, AP, I'm so proud of everybody, I almost want to cry.
Aww.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. It really has. Everybody's just got, you know, just gone out of their way to find out about the day and to write about the day in a way that is incredibly respectful, and it's fantastic. So, Sweet, you were working on a poem. Sweet, you were working on a poem. Was that right?
Yes, it's up. It's in your room. I believe I did put it there.
Brilliant. Okay. Did you want to put it up on the board for me, Sweat?
Okay. I will do that.
Actually, I just did so.
Thank you, Deb.
Okay. All right. This is the last soldier standing. I stood in solitude, my skin charred, my memories forever burned into the roots of my stability. Branches shuddered at the sound of their screams as blades hacked in the soft flesh of their trunks, and I wept as I watched the sap bleed from their veins. Broken bodies of my comrades lay tied together, wrapped in black bags, stacked and prepared to journey onward. My brothers fell as men dug trenches to conceal themselves for battle. Sorry, I lost myself. As my brothers concealed themselves for battle, their deaths were an honor and a horror to behold. Nothing prepared me for the slow motion movie horror played out under the shadows of my shade, the rebuilding of men dying in lost hopes, patching of limbs, begging for forgiveness for all their sins, wishing for one last kiss. Ancestors of the blood poppies and I still watch the tears fall as people came to stand for the men that fell for their country and honor. As festivities end and the last gun fires and the sun falls below the horizon, I still see the men stand with pride in silence. I stand in solitude, my skin charred, and my memories forever burned into the roots of my stability and poem.
Wow.
Thank you, Sweet. Yeah, really good. Deb, did you want to say a few words about Sweet's piece?
Yeah. From the beginning, I stood in solitude, my skin charred, and my memories forever burned into the roots of my stability. I like how you brought it full circle and tied it back to the end for one. It was a starting with power and ending with a haunting truth that, you know, it's there forever. It's those things that you can't unsee, that you can't unhear, that you can't unfeel. And then the stuff in between, like my brother's spell, as men dug trenches to conceal themselves for battle, their deaths were an honor and horror to behold. I mean, it's to use the same word again, it's really sobering. And you brought it from the perspective of these men who were scarred for life by circumstances, the ones that made it out. I just, another powerhouse, Sweet. Very impressive.
Sweet, I've got a little story for you. The Air Force folk, when the first bombing occurred in Darwin, found a dog under the rubble and took the dog to the field ambulance and had its leg set because its leg got broken. He was given the name of Gunner. He was a Kelpie. And Gunner had such fine hearing skills and such differentiated hearing skills that he would yelp and bark and go for the shelter 20 minutes before the radar picked up the Japanese aircraft coming. And he could differentiate between Japanese aircraft, Allied aircraft. And so he would actually, every time there was a Japanese air raid, Gunner gave the Darwin soldiers 30 minutes notice before they were coming, because they would go and jump into the shelters and bark and stuff, which is quite remarkable, really. History didn't actually say what happened to Gunner, but it, Gunner, the Kelpie dog, actually was one of the key items that actually helped save a whole heap of people's lives. Anyway, there you go. Gunner the Kelpie.
You know, I have a dog named Gunner.
Did you?
Oh, there you go.
I do.
Gunner the Kelpie.
Gunner.
I'm going to go to Hatter. Hatter, what did you think of Sweet's poem?
He had to go, AP.
I'm going to go to Wayne. Wayne, did you want to say a few words about Sweet's poem?
This is the most important. It brings here thoughts of a warrior's life. You made the feelings of people fighting to great awareness. And I accept what you were saying. I insist on blood poppies, and I still watch the tears fall as people come to stand for men, for the glory, for the country and honor. This is a wonderful point. Sweet, that's how y'all talk, like y'all been in the war itself and brought a bunch of things to life. Great job.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sweet. Just a great poem. I am now going to put Pee-wee's poem on the board. And Pee-wee and I had a great conversation, actually, about that. About Australians and war and what happened at Anzac, and he he's done a fantastic poem called Clouds, and has sent a SoundCloud in, and so I'm going to play that SoundCloud now.
Flowers. Last drop of blood and life bled out. Up from this ground, rife with lives. Flowers grow up so tall and proud. One at seven will not survive. Gain 2 feet and lose 15 lives. Hell in trenches, bleeding razor wire. Take it back, send home widowed wives. Losing 1 in 10 to friendly fire. Trench foot nightmare, no time to atone. Mustard breath and bullets rain crazy. Friends all gone, coop's been flown. Please send me back to Port Macquarie. Smiles but miles and hurts unending. Tanks and artillery and endless rain. Stuck and cold out here in the trenches. Warm breath, bayonets and hand grenades. Uncle Bill came home crippled last Tuesday. Sits there looking like the world's on fire. Nah, he ain't the same, just stares off to space. Machine guns, mustard gas, and barbed wire. End poem.
Wow.
Yeah, Pee-wee, yeah. Look, and that was exactly what my Uncle Jack was like after being a medic in Africa and then doing the same thing in Japan. He just was not the same person. He sat there looking like the world's on fire, and he just stares into space, and he just used to walk off, and people used to know he would walk off and would just let him do that. I don't know whether to do more than that these days, but it just affected him right down to his core, and that's you're talking about there in that poem. Liquid Damage, did you want to say a few words about Pee-wee's poem?
Me?
Yes, you.
Oh, yeah, Pee-wee, this was so moving. And the emotion in your voice just gave a chill to my spine. This was a beautiful, beautiful piece. The imagery was so, like, there and real, and it made this piece like just kind of pulsate reality. And the ending of it is like, you know, it, that's the reality of the whole thing, is that, you know, the people that came home crippled and torn and broken, and what their lives are like now. But what a strong, strong poem this is. Thank you for sharing it, Pee-wee.
Thank you, Liquid Damage. And Deb, did you want to say a few words about Pee-wee's piece?
Yeah. Pee-wee, I'm so impressed at the presentation. Again, the respect, the details. The work that you put into this poem shows, and I'm so appreciative of you and everybody for what was put into these. I think that you did a spectacular job, and your recording, it was great to get to hear you read it. Your voice and how you read it added to it. Fantastic share.
Yeah, thank you, Pee-wee. That was great. You just did a terrific job of the poem. And not just the poem, but the read was fantastic too. I am going to put Jenny the Deep's poem up on the board, and I'm now going to play her soundtrack.
At dawn they rise. Dawn or dusk they sacrifice. Remember today, for it was their last. Landing in Gallipoli, lives were lost fast. April 25th, 1915, was the beginning of the end for both Australian and Liyuan men. The battlefields bloodied barbarically. Soldiers' wives weep, widows worn out wearily. Beneath the glowing gunmetal palm tree, the fallen now rest a night. Under the ominous wisteria honey swirl sky, a soldier's silent screams are heard echoing. Pay respects for both sides, war is harrowing. Look closer within the tree, don't ignore what your eyes see. Carved is Anzac and all the troops' names. It's our time to remember, not to throw blame. A special tree planted in remembrance. Families gather around each anniversary to tell stories, mourn, or dance. Honor them by researching, but not cursory.
Yeah, thanks, Jenny. It's actually really interesting. All the trees that were planted in these groves for memory of Anzac are starting to come up to the point where they need to be replaced. They're getting too old. And so they're trying to work out how they do that. And these groves of trees are being carefully tended because they're starting to get too old to actually tend properly. So it's a really interesting observation about the trees. Wayne, did you want to say a few words about Jenny's piece?
This is a fantastic song about the war and the feelings of war. And she went through real well and talks about the widows, and it's just another favorite. I can't get over all the tributes they put in tonight and the way they're written. And the girls seem like they have better sense of the situation than the guys do. Very, very good point tonight. Enjoyed the poem a lot.
Yeah, a great one. Thank you. And Deb, did you want to say a few words? And then we'll get you to put your poem on the board too.
Yeah, you know, I think that this is the best recording that Jenny's made. I mean, I never had any complaints about her poems or her recordings, but she took such extra care in this one, which leads me back to the level of love and respect that was put into these to present to you. I'm really having a hard time holding it together here. A lot of the years that we've done this, it's gone in many directions, but it seems like everybody put their heart and soul into these presentations tonight. And I too like the fact that, you know, that she mentioned the tree. Just the detail and the ending, a special tree planted in remembrance. Families gather around each anniversary to tell stories, mourn or dance, honor them by researching, but not cursory. I'm so impressed with everyone. I can't say it enough. Fabulous recording, Jenny. Great poem.
Deb, and we've got your poem to finish, Deb. I'm not going to do a poem today. I just think I'm a bit like you, Deb. I'm sort of blown away by everybody and what they've done and what they've worked on and the research they've done and the respect that they've had in the poems. And I think I'm just going to let that stand for it and stand for itself.
Awesome. Okay. So I've been writing for these for a few years, so I was looking for a different approach. And, you know, if I can find a way to tie in butterflies, I will.
Mm.
I actually stumbled across this story by accident, and I was so impressed and so blown away. So when I'm done, please take a moment to look at these two men, these two generals that I listed in the bottom, especially the commander at the time. He is an extremely decorated officer, and what he did made me cry. So I do have a little poem at the end, but I have information to share first, and this is called Two Australian Generals Helped Save the Butterflies. And here we go. Our butterfly wings the rainbows after cyclones. Storms drive the movement of the monarch butterflies in 1870 as they travel through the Pacific Island and on to Australia. In April of 1918, a butterfly collection faced devastation during some of the most pivotal battles of World War I. But two Australian generals and their troops became the unlikely saviors of the collection of letters and diaries, watercolors of the butterflies, and a selection of the butterflies themselves. Today we see an abundance of Australian butterflies migrate every few years, traveling from northern Queensland further south, even reaching Victoria on the journey. In seasons with increased rainfall, Corky milk vine and mangrove wax flower vines thrive, providing abundant food for larvae. With heavy rainfall, vast numbers of caperwhites come from two above range and descend on Brisbane in pursuit of their larval host plants. Spring sends the monarch butterflies traveling by millions from northeastern Canada and the United States for milkweed to eat. In Australia, on Anzac Day, wing clusters fly in the periwinkle sky, soaring over fields of red poppy blooms, paying tribute to their officer saviors, now listed on monuments and tombs. So if you spy the paisley-winged butterfly stopping to perch on the crimson-colored petals, it's their remembrance for troops that risked all for them. Those decorated with and those without military medals, lest we forget. And Paul.
That's pretty special, Deb. I didn't know that.
I was kind of hoping you would say that.
Do some reading and find out about more about that. But that's a brilliant story. Wonderfully researched, brilliantly written.
Thank you.
And so, I think I'm going to go out with that, Deb. I don't think we can beat that. That's just absolutely brilliant. Now, did you have another poem you wanted to share with us that was part of that? I'm just trying to think. I'm a bit sort of blown away, really.
The ending, the last two stanzas there was my little brevity. The rest is... Oh, you know, there is one thing that a man named Chris Thompson from the Great Southern Weekender said. These small objects, the butterflies and the letters, have a large story to tell about the strong and enduring relationship between the people of Australia and France and our collective history. The city document promises. And if you look at some of the stuff, like I said, I there's a link there that will take you to Monsieur Boulet's butterfly collection. But more importantly, these two generals, like I said, look at the first write-up. That's just stats from the war. That's a list of his medals. And I'm just so impressed. In the middle of total chaos, these hard-headed, amazing men went in and saved this. I was so blown away and taken by them. So I wanted to share the information, lighten it up just a little with the poem, but I felt compelled to make sure that everybody had a chance to read about the two of them. One's career and kudos were not as vast as the first, but in my book, they're both outstanding gentlemen, and like, I was very touched by their stories.
No, it's brilliant. Thank you. No, it's a great story, beautifully told. Great research. I have to say, I've been a bit blown away by the research and the work that everybody's done, and the way that they've put their poems together, which has just been fantastic. I've done a number of these shows, Deb. I think this is by far and away the best one we've had. So, honestly, my thanks to yeah, my thanks to everybody, to yourself, to Wayne, to Liquid Damage, to Pee Wee, to Jenny, to Sweet, to Hatter, to Stephen, to Kay, for just putting this together in I think just a, you know, it just a brilliant show. And my thanks to everybody for treating the day as respectfully as you have. And I don't think I've got anything more to say, Deb.
Wayne. I think
yes.
I just wanted to thank you again for your service in the middle of all this. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
Just felt like it needed to be said. You're a hero.
Thank you, Wayne.
I appreciate it.
Okey-doke. Well, with no further ado, I'm going to finish the show right there. Thank you to everybody. Thank you again, Wayne. Thank you to everybody for your
thanks, AP.
Wonderful poem.
Great show.
And
it's a great show.
We will be back with normal Monday programming in the weeks to come. So thank you again. And as I said, I'm a privilege to be hosting and to be listening. So thank you all.
Yeah, thank you for making me learn something new.
Pleasure, Linda. Pleasure. So thank you to everybody, and thank you, Deb. And we will, as I said, be back with regular Monday program very soon.
Yes, we will. Next Monday is during JCA quotes, so join us at 10 Eastern. And stop by tomorrow if you get a chance. Join Rack and Tour, 10 p.m. Eastern. Thanks, everyone.
Terrific. Thank you, Deb. Thanks, everybody. And as I said, it's been a great honor listening to all the pumps. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Hey, AP.
Yes.
G'day.
Thank you. Okay, bye.